It is time for our regular segment, Be Well, where we focus on your wellness and ours. And today, a positive body image. One of the challenges of summer can be actually less clothing, whether it's a swimsuit on the beach or just shorts and a tank top. And in our body-conscious, thin-focused culture, that can create a lot of pressure on people. At the same time, we're evolving in our understanding of what it means to be fat, obese, thin, thin enough, healthy, unhealthy, and that there is no perfect body. And we want to talk about that today. The complicated relationship between health, weight, and how we see ourselves. So we start with Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford, physician, scientist of obesity medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School, and she is one of the leading researchers in the field of obesity. Dr. Stanford, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
So I'm glad to have you, and I just want to start by asking you, what is a healthy body? How do we even define what a healthy body is?
You know, I think that when we think about a healthy body, we do focus on size and, you know, your introduction to really focus on that. But I really think we need to think about, you know, being more, you know, beyond the aesthetics of an individual, right? You can't look at a person and look at their size and know what their overall health status is. And so a healthy body is one that has great cardiometabolic health. And by that, I mean, you know, has a good cholesterol value, has good blood pressure, has good liver enzymes, you know, these types of things that really will determine our propensity to chronic diseases such as obesity or type 2 diabetes or heart disease, et cetera. But in order to really evaluate that, right, we have to go, you know, beyond skin deep. And I think that what we typically do is we see an individual, we assume that they're health status is one way or another just by looking at them and not doing any type of deep dive to really get the true answer.
All right, so I'm going to bring in our second voice here. Here in the studio, we have Rachel Estapa. She is a plus-size wellness influencer and the founder of More to Love Yoga, a studio that caters to plus-size people. Rachel, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So I saw you nodding a lot as Dr. Stanford was talking there, and I want to ask you what resonated so deeply with you about what Dr. Stanford said.
Having this conversation maybe 15 years ago would be unheard of, that we can come to a bigger, broader conversation around what it means to be healthy, but more importantly, what it means to live in a larger body and going through the trials and tribulations around identifying as yourself, among terms like obesity or terms like diseases. So I resonate deeply with the dual edge of this being part of the conversation. And also there are people like me, like others that have lived what the doctor is talking about, the ups and downs of blood work results, the ups and downs of numbers describing your worth, your value, and taking things a bit deeper into the self, that there's so much work in our population, in our society, to be done and to help guide that. That's really what my work is about.
So, Dr. Stanford, I'll turn back to you here, and I'm really struck by something you said, and Rachel picked it up thematically just now, which is reframing what we mean by health. And I heard you really call out that we have a visual history of deciding what's healthy. How did we get there, and what do we need to do? Help me, right? What do I need to do to change that conversation?
Well, you know, unfortunately, our idea of like weight bias or weight stigma, our propensity towards leanness and thinness as being the norm, really starts really early in life. If you look at studies, we show that weight bias begins on average at 32 months of age. Mm. Notice I didn't say anything beyond that, 32 months of age. So I want you to think back to your toddler years. And so then people wonder, well, like, how they're influenced by, you know, with regards to their weight status. It comes from our parents. It comes from our caregivers. And often when I say this to parents, they are, you know, struck. And they say, well, you know, I never say anything negative. And I said, it's also what you're not saying. For example, let's say you're watching television with your child or not, you know, maybe they're walking through the room and you only comment positively on people that are lean or thin and say, oh, wow, look at how amazing they look. And then you don't say anything negative about people that, let's say, have obesity, have excess body weight, but you don't say anything at all. And so the message that's being received by that child that then becomes an adult that then decides that thinness is, you know, what our beauty and culture standards abide by, is governed by what their early life exposures are. So like when I'm looking at, you know, this disease that is obesity, we come into this idea of like, what does that mean? And why do I call it a disease? And what we have to recognize is that obesity is a where we have excess adipose or fat tissue. And that's governed by how the brain actually regulates weight. We have two primary pathways down our brain by which we regulate weight, one which tells us to eat more and store more, and one that tells us to eat less and store less. And notice I didn't say willpower at all in that conversation.
Right.
That has nothing to do with how the brain decides to interact with our different organs and express either an excess body weight or one that does not have excess. But when I look at this excess, I have to go beneath the surface. So if a patient comes to me with obesity based upon what the screening tool tells me, like, oh, okay, they have this heightened weight, I need to look below the skin surface and say, what is their actual health status? Because I have patients that are 300 pounds that have health that is significantly superior to those that may weigh 150 pounds. But if I were to just look at them, the assumption would be, right, based upon what we're taught, that that person with 150 pounds must be significantly healthier than the person at 300 pounds. So let's go beneath the surface. Let's look at the whole person. Let's look at the overall health and determine what their health is without just, you know, I guess, focusing on just the size alone as the key factor.
So, Rachel, I'm going to bring in a listener voice here and then give you a chance to react. So we reached out to members of our subtext group here to give them a chance to share thoughts and comments. And listeners, if you want to join that group, you can text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's text the word Boston to 617-766-0382 to join our text group. A couple of them actually then left us voicemails, and I want to share one. She asked us not to use her name, which I think is indicative of how intense this conversation is. She's from Arlington. Here's a piece of what she told us.
I work in a school where very lean, healthy 8-year-olds complain of having thighs that are too big and being mocked for that. I grew up in the 70s and 80s when most all mothers and teens were on diets together, no matter their size. For many girls, this is the genesis of an eating disorder. As for me, I've suffered the collateral damage through all of these forces. Despite being a thin adolescent, I followed the expectation of very restricted eating. So let's just say that as I feel the warm breeze of summer, it saddens me deeply that my first response relates to the panic of having to remove layers of clothing and my body being seen.
And what she brings in there, Rachel, is then this last piece, which is body image, self-image. And I know this is something you think a lot about. So reflect on what you just heard.
Yeah, I don't just think about it. I live it. I've lived it since my first memories of a doctor's appointment when I was 6 years old and I was told I was too big. And how that set off, as she called it, the collateral damage of yo-yoing, being both a good kid, quote unquote, good kid, against the realities of your body changing and people around you, doctors, teachers, peers, family members, not really sure what to do about it other than change. And that message of change, 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 it starts early. And when I hear people, because this is not an uncommon thing that I hear from people as mothers, as parents, as people still on the path of healing and recovery, or maybe not even at that point yet, I hear exhaustion. I hear a true heart belief that we want to be good. We want to feel good. And we want to let those things be determined more on our own visceral experiences than the annual checkup with a doctor. And here's where I may split from our other guest, just purely on the sense that we are more whole than what these systems in our bodies are. And I'm from the yogic background, where I believe that systems and how our bodies interact, it is far more complex and nuanced than just today I have this cholesterol level and tomorrow I don't. And this absolutism that, you know, is the strength of the medical community, when it comes to the individual lived experience of being in a body that you feel is judged from the get-go before you even had a chance, it is so and consuming for yourself, your identity. You start to question, am I seeing things differently? Am I experiencing things completely wrong? And that is a core issue of a human being, regardless of what your size is, regardless of what your weight is. And that softness that I can hear in the caller's voice of, believe me, I care. I care about these topics. I care about health and well-being, but it's going to look different because my body is not your body. My body is not what the BMI standard is. And if anything, this type of conversation of starting to peel back the scientific realm of this, the hardcore facts, well, there are people that live these things, you know. Like I said, as a youth, being on diets in college and beyond, over-exercising to the point of pain, to the point of damage, that's not body, that's not health, that's not acceptance.
Dr. Stanford, I'm sure you want to react to that and build on it, so let me turn back to you.
Yeah, I think I'm actually good. I think that the other caller is unaware of like my background and my commitment to this work beyond just, you know, what the cholesterol values and things show. So what we do know is that obesity is a complex, multifactorial disease where environment, development, behavior all play a role in a person's likelihood of having this disease. And we look at the contributors to obesity, we know that there are over 100 factors, everything from racism. So the highest group of, in terms of obesity, in terms of the highest propensity is Black women. Racism we know is a major issue and a stressor. We know that increase in stress, the stress that I was hearing from the caller, stress that I'm hearing from the person that called in earlier, also reflect a storage of adipose tissue. Adipose is an organ that interacts and causes a cascade of negative things within the body. You know, the number one risk factor for both morbidity and mortality surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, unfortunately, was this disease that we call obesity. And the factors that cause it outside of issues like trauma or things like stress or disordered eating, which then, of course, defends a higher set point, age-related changes, which are common in women's lives, where at the onset of menarche, when we first get our menstrual cycle, pregnancy and menopause, we see major weight shifts. We see weight bias and stigma leading to increased weight status and increased issues with that. Thermogenesis, which is how much the body burns at rest and with activity, and the gut microbiota, the bacteria in the gut of individuals that are lean versus those that have obesity, differ quite drastically. So we know this is a complex disease. When I'm working with patients that range in age from 2 to 90, my goal is to find out what are the different factors. And for many of my patients, there are no less than 10 of these 100-plus factors that are contributing to their disease. I never give them a target BMI because BMI is not based in medicine or science. It is based upon the Metropolitan Life Insurance tables from the 1940s, where white individuals were assessed for their risk of dying based upon their weight status.
So I'm going to stop you there because I want to underscore that, Dr. Stanford, because many focus on BMI to this day. You're saying that that's kind of a random, arbitrary, what's that when somebody does insurance? I can't remember the word of what that job. Actuarial. It's an actuarial standard, not a health standard.
Absolutely. So I think of BMI as a screening tool, not a diagnostic tool. It gives the population-wide view. But when I'm working with an individual patient, and you can ask any of my over 3,000 patients, I never give them a target weight, much to their dismay. They come in asking me what weight should they be, and I say whatever the happiest, healthiest weight is for you, based upon us maximizing and optimizing your health.
Okay.
That deviates from what we typically hear, because we do have this hyper-focus on a value that's not founded or based in science.
So I find that, again, also, and I do, our listeners, we had a lot of people text in. I used one voicemail, but in honor of our listeners, a lot of people spoke very vulnerably, right, to us. And I appreciate that so much. I hear you. You know, I went on my first diet when I was 10. I have spent my entire life not feeling good about myself, no matter where I've been, right? And I think many people can identify with that. So, Rachel, I'll come back to you as we wrap this, and clearly this is something we could talk about for 3 hours. Help people who are listening. So Dr. Stanford has given us a reframing of how we understand our health. So now you give us a positive reframing of how to love ourselves in the moment we're in.
Well, that's something that I think about and have to work on every day for myself. And my view around health and wellness and self-love is trying to be as aware and honest to the present moment as you possibly can. Because so many pieces of ideas and thoughts and perspectives, they get, you know, muddied up in our own minds. But what is true about our bodies is that they don't lie. And this is at the heart of my study with self-love and yoga and wellness, is that a self-trust around the body is something that can bring us into a portal of self-love. Meaning, if we can learn how to be with ourselves, with our breath, with our just physical body, it opens up so many more opportunities to feel that sense of agency, right? Because you can throw out all these numbers, and then the same thing with people have wishes and dreams to change their lives for the better. Without taking that sense of ownership and agency, it's impossible to do that. And that all comes down to self-love and acceptance. So being true and honest to yourself, to your realities, to your health needs, to your personal and emotional, social, spiritual needs, that is also the instrument of well-being.
So Dr. Stanford, I'll come back to you. That sense of self-agency, that sense of being at peace with where you are in the moment to make healthy changes if one needs to, does that resonate for you in working with patients? And maybe just a couple of sentences as we wrap here.
Absolutely. I think the key thing to notice that when patients come to me, they've done whatever they can do to maximize their health. They often need additional strategies for me to affect their actual biology, to change and make it such that it's not such a struggle from day in and day out. But like I tell you, I want them to get to the happiest, healthiest weight for them. They are not, unless they're an identical twin, striving to be like anyone else. And that is, I think, really one of the key things that I want to get across. Health is important. Unfortunately, obesity is a disease that affects almost half of our population. But with that, we can be our happiest, healthy selves and recognize that we are not all the same human. We're heterogeneous. Each person should be valued.
All right. Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford is one of the leading researchers on obesity with MGH and Harvard Medical School. And Rachel Estapa is a wellness influencer and founder of More to Love Yoga. Thank you both for engaging in this subject with us and doing some reframing. Rachel, thanks for being in the studio. Dr. Stanford, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you.